Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations standpoint. With your hosts, Bo Spearham and Karina Hogan.
Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk. Before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we are broadcasting from today. I'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which you are taking this broadcast from across this beautiful country. I'd also like to acknowledge elders past and present and elders of more recent arrivals. You can catch Let's Talk on 98.9fm.com.au, on the app, or you can tune into all major platforms, Spotify, Apple, and so on, to get Let's Talk. You can also listen to the repeat tonight at 7 p.m. And catch us having a chat today, this wonderful NAIDOC Week 2021. Good morning, Bo.
Good morning, sis. How you going?
I'm pretty good. Third day of NAIDOC, rather. Mm. Always a time to celebrate what it means to be Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander.
Yes. No, it is, sis. It is. As we mentioned on the program yesterday, this whole week we'll be sort of focusing around the theme, which is Heal Country, Heal Our Nation.
Yes.
Which is, you know, what we've been doing in terms of getting our guests on to speak about the deadly work that they're doing to protect country, rejuvenate country, to, you know, look after country and work with it, continue to hurt, you know, Mother Earth and stuff as well. But before we go any further, I just want to mention 2 days ago, Santos, the mining company, which has its building, a major building here in Brisbane, you can literally see it from our station, they put a tweet out on their Twitter, and it says, "Around Australia, we celebrate our NAIDOC weekend. You know, this year's theme is Heal Country, where they focus on recognising, protecting, maintaining all aspects of culture and heritage for all Australians." It's funny because, as we know, Santos is a large mining company that, you know, is involved in fracking and other forms of mining. At the moment, they just won a bid last year to, or being given approval by the environmental minister to open up parts of the Pilliga near Narrabri, and a part of the Narrabri gas project, which is a $1 billion sort of enterprise.
Yeah,
$2 billion enterprise. But the funny thing about that post is, I just kept reading it last night, and there's lots of replies and lots of retweets to them saying, you know, who the hell are you? You know, like, is this a joke?
Mm.
You know, like, yeah. If you're on Twitter, head to Santos and just check out their post, because it's some of the most funniest things that I've seen in terms of, you know, just the mob having a go at them and you know, non-Indigenous peoples as well, just sort of questioning, you know, why they, you know, one, make a post like this and then continue to do it.
Yeah, and it's affected a lot of mob down there and around the country.
Around the world,
And so just to give you a bit of background on it, so Santos had a $4.7 billion Barossa gas field proposal for down there.
Yep.
And there was a report actually that came out that said that that there would be more CO2 than LNG.
And the place that they're that they've, yeah, so the Pilliga Scrub and where they want to frack is above the Great Artesian Basin. Now, the Great Artesian Basin is the world's largest underground water basin.
Yes.
And like the biggest in the world. And it takes up about, I think it's almost like a million kilometres, like radius. So starts in central Queensland, goes down through New South Wales, I think, you know, maybe towards Canberra. I don't know if it goes to Victoria. And then goes across to sort of the states sort of more south to us as well. It's a massive open land underwater system that could potentially be contaminated and disrupted due to fracking. Because what they do is they send the pipes down and they explode underground to capture the gas, or they crack, all the rock, and then they get the gas. And sometimes through the cracking, it cracks different parts of the earth and the gas seeps through. And so that's why you see some rivers where people can light their lighter up and, like, the river's on fire.
And it's crazy. I mean, absolutely, I think it's concerning.
Also,
at the very least, we should be definitely talking
also,
about it.
Just, sorry, sis.
No,
really quickly
right.
as well, online I saw this video in the Gulf of Mexico. You may have seen it. It's been just travelling around on social media quite a bit. And
I haven't.
It's of like a gas, an inland or – no, sorry, not an inland, a deep-sea gas mining company.
Wow, I just pulled it up.
Yeah, their gas exploded under the earth and like
– So there are bright orange flames jumping out of a water and they're calling it the eye of the fire on social media. So it's like these bright orange flames that are jumping out of water that almost looks like, I don't know, like lava. And the cause of it, what's the cause of it, Bo?
Well, there's an oil rig next to it as well. So there was an underground explosion or underwater explosion that happened and then that obviously created that. I think the Gulf of Mexico is like really bad with oil spills as well.
Wow, the footage is actually quite phenomenal. Jump on and have a look at that if you can.
Definitely.
It's called The Eye of the Fire and SBS have a good little thing. The thing that actually interested me about the Santos thing you were just talking about is that iron ore magnate Andrew Forrest actually attacked Santos over the plans to develop the new gas field in the Timor Sea. And he was saying that it is going to be one of the most polluting projects in the world. So, and that's coming from an iron ore magnate.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think this is something that's definitely worth talking about this week on NAIDOC 2021.
Yes. There's been lots of activity. So down home, there's about five mines that are active and inactive. So there's underground mine where they like you know go underground.
Mm.
There's a big open cut like pit mine, and then this is fracking. So what they want to do is drill about a kilometer down, and so the first stage of their approval, they've got the approval to do almost 1,000 drills. For gas, and I think they have like a, you know, the life span is like 15 to 20 years of a mining company.
The project would so even take into account a possible reduction, they would still produce 1.1 ton of CO2 equivalent for every ton of LNG, according to John Robert, who is a chemical engineer and industrial economist with extensive experience in the industry. But Santos haven't really responded other than to say that this is going to create hundreds
jobs.
Of new jobs.
Of course.
Okay.
And
so
what
let's
we do know about mining
that.
Companies, especially in sort of rural remote areas, is the majority of their workers are FIFO.
Right, right.
And
so it's not supporting the local mob is what you're saying?
It never does. Never supports.
And
black
I mean,
followers.
Even if it does, I mean, that's
yeah.
kind of almost still beside the point. I mean, this is
then,
huge as far as pollution is concerned. And today on Let's Talk, we're going to be speaking about something that's incredibly important to healing country.
Definitely. So, you know, we sort of briefly mentioned it yesterday and I think a few times over the program, even last week, you know, the effects of these mining companies and what they've done to small islands, low-level islands here in Australia, in the Pacific, is something very, very drastic and we need to continue to raise awareness and talk about it. And our first guest this morning is joining us, is from the Torres Straits.
Yes. He's actually flown in all the way from the Torres Straits just for this episode.
Just for the show.
No.
Did you cover it?
Yeah.
He covered the flights and accommodation there.
Yeah, because I got all that money, you know. They pay me the big bucks. And so this morning we're going to be chatting with someone from the Torres Strait who gets directly impacted by stuff that we're talking about here. Climate change, right?
Yes.
Yesse Mosby is from the Torres Straits. Good morning, Yesse.
Yeah, good morning.
So before we begin, I'll get you to tell us who your mob is and where you're from.
Yeah, well, my name is Yesse Mosby. I come from the island of Masig, the traditional name, York Island, as it's also known as, from the Kulkalgal Nation, Kulkalgal Tribe, central part of Torres Strait.
Lovely. Tell us what it's like up there. You obviously live up there and you've come down here, you know, for family stuff.
Mm.
Tell us what it's like up there. I know you said that you're freezing cold.
Well, living up there, I lived Torres Strait all my life. We only have two weather. Yeah, we only have two weather. It's hot and very hot.
You're on the beach anyway, so you're right.
Yeah. Where I come from, it's a Coral Cay Island. It's a beautiful Coral Cay Island. It's a shape of a teardrop. If people want to check it out on Google, it's we call it the teardrop of the Straits.
It certainly is absolutely stunning up there. And I have this page called The Avid Traveller, and I'm forever putting photos up there of your beautiful island, but never been there. But for me, today we particularly wanted to talk to you, Yese, because you've been sort of part of leading a fight around what's happening up there as far as climate change is concerned and how that is impacting the islands up there, in particular your island, Masig Island. I want you to tell me, you've brought together a case to the Australian government, essentially, to call on them to do something. Tell us what that is.
Yeah, there's eight of us. We're eight claimants here. We're taking up this fight for our future generations. Our fight is not to be refugees in our own country, to live life and practice our culture and tradition as we've been for so many hundreds of years, and to keep that spirit. Our fight is how the climate change is affecting and how it's eroding our erosion. It's eating our island away.
You mentioned eight of you. Are you all from the same island or different islands?
We're all from different islands. The other two claimants is from the Top Western Islands. They're from Buigo, and their island is like a swampy island. And they have the same bad effect like us on the low-lying central islands of the Torres Strait.
And so data shows that sea levels in that area are rising at a rate double the global average. And according to the Climate Council, the shallowness of this stretch of ocean exacerbates storm surges. And when they coincide with high tides, extreme sea levels result. Have you seen this play out on day-to-day living? Because you've been there for how long?
All my life.
All your life. How old are you?
I'm 37. 38.
You've been there your whole life. So how have you seen it kind of change over time? Like, what are some of the things that you've noticed walking along the beach, waking up in the morning, whatever?
You see a lot of, like, you'll see a tree there, and a month pass, the tree won't be there. Like, you know, it's taken away a lot of things. We have our loved ones where we've walked on the beach and helped our families pick up their remains.
Yeah, I spoke to Tish last week, and she mentioned last time she went home, you know, unfortunately that's what she had to do, was find, you know, pick the remains up of family members. You know, how far does the water sort of rise through the island?
Well, it mainly affects the coastal. When we have the monsoon time, we'll have a lot of inundations. Even here for the southeasterly side of the island, we've got the trade wind, which blows for 9 months. So every time when there's full moon, we expect king tides, and the wind picks up, and then we have, like, you know, we experience inundations and scary stuff like that. Yeah.
What do they call them? They block the water. So the seawall, I guess, you know, is one thing to sort of prevent some water, but with...
It's kind of the aftermath, right?
Definitely.
Like, the sea waters have already risen.
So like that's obviously one thing, I guess, that mob would want as well. But, you know, I guess, you know, with this claim, like, you're wanting to sort of take the Australian government to court on their inaction essentially continuing to do what they do here on the mainland.
You know, what we were talking about before with Santos, I mean, that contributes to it and the release of those gases. But the interesting part for me is that the Torres Straits has not really contributed to climate change at all. But yet they're on the front line of all of its impacts. Now, Yese, you took this to the Prime Minister of Australia. What did you say to him?
We asked the Prime Minister if they could stop the fossil fuel burning and if he could come up to our homes and have a look with his own eyes. He didn't respond to that one. He responded to the UN that the country is not contributing anything to for the climate change and stuff, and that nothing is happening now. due to like climate change and stuff.
Bit of a denial there from Scott Morrison, which I think is quite disappointing that he would not take into account what someone from a First Nations community has said about the concerns that they are clearly seeing. You're not making this stuff up, you know. This is not something that you want. It kind of blows my mind a little bit, I think, that there's no regard almost for it.
Our brother, off air, you were talking about how you speak two other languages or three languages and then English.
English third.
Yeah. English is your third language. In English, you know, like, at the moment we're throwing around this word called climate change. Is there a word in your language that sort of talks about climate change? Are there stories that were passed down that spoke about climate change and the inevitable of moving away from our country because it may sink?
In our history, we never heard anything. We never was told about climate change. We don't have language for climate change. We don't have language for big surge tide would come and take our islands, you know, eating our islands home and stuff like that. It's something totally new.
But in your language, you were taught about how to maintain your islands, protect, rejuvenate.
Yeah. We grew up knowing, like, as Indigenous people, we know how to cultivate our home, how to look after our home. We were taught to each season's what to collect, what is the food to eat at particular times, and so forth. Now it buggers up the system as well, where it's hard to cultivate. We experience more long droughts, you know, much more stronger, severe storms, which we didn't experience that before and stuff. So it happens more frequently now. It's confusing for our elders who are still alive today that what they see in their eyes, they never seen before.
If you've just joined us here at 98.9 FM's Let's Talk program, we're chatting with Yesse Mosby, who is from Masig Island. He happens to be down here in Brizzy. And this week for NAIDOC Week, Heal Country, Heal Our Nation, we're focusing on parts of the country that are impacted by things like climate change, mining, and so on, so that we can get the conversation rolling and get an understanding around what is sort of happening in these islands. Yes, have you worked with scientists who have supported your claims, with lawyers, with people who see this for what it is and who are, I guess, maybe assisting or are part of the fight with you guys?
Yeah, I work very closely with 350 Australia and Client Earth. They're based in London. They work very closely with us. They monitor the situations, what's happening up in the Torres Strait, and not only through the Torres Strait, but throughout the Pacific as well, and here on mainland Australia. We have scientists comes up to our home, have a look at our home and share their knowledge about what's happening to our beautiful home, which is scary.
What are you hearing them say when they come up and they do the research that's behind it? I mean, the best scientist in the whole entire world, let's be honest, is you sitting right in front of us. When a scientist goes up there, university-trained scientist goes up there, what kind of things are they walking away with and saying?
Listening to scientists who comes up and observe our home there, listening to them, like how we know our country very well, but listening to them because we know our country very well, but we don't know the scientific side. We don't know about climate change. We don't know about, you know, the impact of fossil fuel and stuff and how does that affect our home. Listening to them, it's very scary when you listen to scientists where you never met before, you know, you've seen probably three or four times come up and tell you with probably in the next 50 to 80 years, you will have to be relocated from your home. It's scary. You know, that's what we're talking about, being we're probably going to be the first refugees in our own country.
Wow. And you know, we talk about connection to country, brother, but how do you have a connection to country if your country's underwater? I mean, that's scary. You've got a three-year-old son. You're a father of six, right?
Seven.
Seven. Seven. You're a father of seven. Youngest one's three?
One.
One. Goodness me, brother, you go. See, you're living my dream, but no.
Well, just on that, you know what I mean? Like, you know, our elders, they're very headstrong, you know, and you know, when they get something, you know, in their head and in their heart, they want to stay and fight and come up with a solution. But, you know, you just mentioned that, you know, like, I guess your children, you know, maybe the elders in that time when, you know what I mean? Like, if those scientists are right, you know, maybe they have to make the decision to sort of, you know, say, hey, we have to leave now because, you know, our island is, you know, is sinking more, or the water is rising and taking our island. You know, now what are the elders sort of saying to you in regards to sort of, you know, finding a solution, or, you know, what do they want at the moment?
Well, definitely we want something done ASAP. We want something done now. Like listening to one of an elder from Saibai Island, it's very emotional how he talks. And he practically covers, he's the voice of all elders, because all the other elders of other islands who are in the same, like living the same fearful life, feels the same way. He said that if it has to come to relocation, just take the kids home and leave us here. Leave me here. He just wants to go with the home. Mm-hmm. It's very hard because when you, to leave a home, if it has to come to that, to leave your genealogy behind, mm-hmm. your lineage, your history, your culture, your tradition, it cuts off your ties for everything that you've been believed in for hundreds of years. It won't be the same, and it's emotional. Even if I'll be at that particular time, if it happens, if I'm alive and stuff like that, I would really want them to, you know, cremate me and put me in a tomb. That if something happens like that, that my kids, you know, will open the tomb and take me with them, because at least they'll have some connection to someone who lived on that land all of their life, you know? It's fearful. We do think things like that. It affects us mentally, spiritually, and physically.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then just to sort of top it off, is to not get acknowledgement from the person who is supposed to be running this country is incredibly concerning. If you've just joined us on 98.9, we're chatting with Yese Mosby, who is from the Masig Island. And as mentioned, he's also part of what's also called the Pacific Climate Warriors, or the 350 Pacific. So you can visit world.350.org/Pacific Warriors. That's world.350.org/Pacific Warriors to get more information about that.
Is there a petition on that website?
And to sign this petition, which is actually up on the front here. But there's a whole bunch of stuff that's on here that people are fighting for. So you get 10, 20 minutes with the Prime Minister this morning. He's just texted you and said, I'm going to meet you just down here in Brizzy, Parliament House. What are you going to say to him?
If I have the opportunity,
no swearing.
I'll tell him I drink English breakfast tea with 2 sugars. If I have the opportunity to see him in person, I will tell him, like, you, please come home and have a look. Have a look at our situation, because living in your house is totally different from how I live in my house. Come up and see my home and what we're facing. Living a life of what I'm living is not a healthy life. Yeah.
It's definitely something that I think is important for us to be speaking about here today on Let's Talk, because this week for NAIDOC 2021, the theme is Heal Country, Heal Our Nation. And when we talk about what we have been speaking about here, which is what is happening in the Torres Straits, it is sea levels are rising at 50% more than anywhere else. You guys are on the forefront of the effects of climate change, when you guys are actually not the ones up there that are producing the issues. We're going to head to a quick song, because I know that you've got to head off. You've got going up to the hospital with your little boy. And you wanted to play a song by King Kadu. So we'll talk about this when we come back here on 98.9 FM's Let's Talk. But this is Mau Power and King Kadu.
There is over oral history. Pass your story to the children of tomorrow.
You strong, Mr.
Can't sit here and stare in sorrow. There is over oral history. Pass your story to the children. children of tomorrow. Stand them in good stead so they will follow.
Sing strong.
Out, you nearly walked into me. You want to get your eyes tested? Nah, seriously. Some of us need to have our eyes tested by an optometrist more often than others. If you're living with diabetes, then you should be seeing your optometrist every year. This is because 98% of Mob's vision loss from diabetes is preventable or treatable. So don't forget to see your optometrist every year to keep your vision deadly. And don't forget your Jarjums too. They should be getting their first eye test with an optometrist around the time they turn 5. School screenings don't replace normal eye tests, so book your little one in with the optometrist at your local clinic before they start school and set them up for a bright future. Plus, now is the perfect time, as you can pick up a free pair of Stylin' Sunnies when you get an eye test. That should help shade those rays.
Deadly.
So head on down to a participating clinic today. To find your closest clinic, head to iuih.org.au.
A message from the Institute for Urban Indigenous Health. Station sponsor.
This is Bo Spearham and Karina Hogan with Let's Talk.
And that was Mau Power and King Kadu with Warrapa War. And you picked that song. He's laughing at me now, see? How do I pronounce it?
Warrapa
War. What's that one about?
Echo of Drums.
It's a deadly song. King Kadu sings some really deadly songs from up there.
Yeah, he has beautiful songs and Mau Power as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are very good young artists. He's my schoolies.
Is he?
Yeah.
So he's originally from Mer Island and is a prominent musician, but he's based in Melbourne now.
Hey, yeah, Mau. Uncle Kadu.
Yeah.
Kadu?
Yeah.
Who's okay? You.
He's a solid artist. So this week for Let's Talk, we're yarning with, today particularly, we're yarning with Yese Mosby, who is part of, you could call it the Pacific Climate Warriors or the 350.org, but also a part of a group of people who are putting a claim together against the Australian government around climate change for their inaction, for the fact that you guys are at the forefront of the impacts of climate change, but yet aren't the ones that are actually producing the issues. And it was interesting before when you said he sits in his house, in Kirribilli House or wherever it is. It's so very far away from the house that you live in up on them islands. They're so very far removed from who you are. Moving forward, what would you like to see? What is your ultimate goal? Well, you know, obviously it's to have a safe place to live in and you know, it'd be great to have back what we once had. But what's the outcome? What would you like to see happen with the Australian government with climate change?
Stop burning of fossil fuels. Listen to the traditional owners of that area. We've been monitoring our home for so long. To listen to us and listen to our feedback. If we say, like we've been living there for over 1,000 years, if we say that something's happening and we cannot control it, listen. We've been controlling everything so far, you know, from how our ancestors lived. But there's some things where we cannot control. Stop burning a fossil fuel will contribute a lot for our people.
So, as mentioned, you can jump on world.350.org/Pacific Warriors, and there's a petition down here that you can pick. It's called Stand with the Warriors, and you can join an action, or you can show your solidarity, or you can also click on a few other things there. But on that page specifically, there is the option to stand up with the Pacific Warriors and to stand up against climate change and what is it?
Yeah, our islands, our home.
Our islands are home.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so if you jump on to that website, it's on there. And I'll be signing the petition. Bo, you'll be signing the petition because...
Maybe we'll swing it around through the office as well, get them all the mob here to sign in the building.
It doesn't take anything just to share it. And can people also donate money as well to the cause?
Yeah, it should say there as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe we'll put the podcast up as well. We'll chuck the link to the petition up as well.
So we'll once we've put this particular podcast up today, we'll pop that exact link in there, so that you can donate, so that you can support the petition. Yes, it's incredible having you in here. Also, I know that you are going through a lot of things with your family. You know, with your family being sick and unwell. So, I mean, also doing this stuff, I think that it's incredibly, you know, brave and courageous of you, but also it takes a lot. It takes a lot for someone to be leading the fight on something like this. So, you know, from one black fella to another, just thank you so much for coming on and speaking your truth, telling us about your beautiful home and spreading the word about this. Thank you very much.
Esso.
Esso. And that was Yese Mosby from Musig Island, and he is coming in this morning to talk to us. He came in this morning to talk to us about NAIDOC Healing Country. I think it's a critical time to talk about climate change if we're talking about healing country, Bo, and the fact that Yese is leading the fight in the Torres Straits to try and keep that home, you know, so he can pass it down to his 7 children. I think is an incredibly important thing.
Definitely.
And so for the rest of the program, we're going to be yarning a little bit more about Healing Country and
Definitely.
Healing Nation.
Definitely. We'll hopefully be chatting with Larissa Baldwin, who is our Dudley First Nation sister that is working with Get Up. He was there when Seed started in 2014, has been supporting community from around the country. Who are fighting against the fossil fuel industry and climate change, you know, and really supporting community in terms of, you know, showing them the way to sort of, you know, advocate and do all these different things as well. Like, you know, they did an amazing work in the NT a couple of years ago when they put the moratorium in against fracking. You know, a lot of the mob were driving around to different communities. And there, some of the communities became frack-free, you know, Aboriginal communities, which was pretty cool to see. And obviously that moratorium has been lifted. And I think she's back up in the NT supporting communities against fracking.
The work that she's doing is pretty unrelenting. I think it's amazing. So we're going to head to Seaman Dan Mina Mura Moon. And when we get back, we're going to chat with Larissa Baldwin about what's happening up there.
This is Bo Spearham and Karina Hogan with Let's Talk.
And that was Uncle Seaman Dan with Mina Mira Moon, which I played twice as well, just to give you a little bit of extra Uncle Seaman Dan, who I will say passed away earlier this year. Oh, sorry, late last year on the 30th of December in Edmonton, Cairns. He's an award-winning ARIA Award winner, and he was 92 when he was recognised multiple times for raising the profile of First Nations music. He was born on Thursday Island in 1929, the great-grandson of a Jamaican sailor and grandson of a chief's daughter from New Caledonia. Yeah, and today and this week for Let's Talk, we're talking NAIDOC Week. NAIDOC 2021 is Healing Country. We just spoke with Yese Mosby from Musig Island, who is leading the fight against the effects of climate change with the government, who he says, along with everyone else in the claim, that the government are not doing enough to stop climate change. They're at the forefront. Yeah, they're at the forefront of being impacted by this. Their sea levels are rising at 50% more than any other place.
And they produce
the least amount of CO2.
Also, this Friday, there is the NAIDOC March that is going ahead per usual, which will be from Parliament House back into Musgrave Park as well. I'll get the poster up with some with the time and the location of that event as well. So if you can, please head to that as well, which would be great.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's incredibly important to also remember that during this time, COVID is still an issue around the country. So just making sure
your face mask and
you wear your face mask,
hand sanitizer and social distance, which I'm very sure they will have face mask and hand sanitizers.
We're pretty good at that, aren't we?
At that event as well, because at the last few major events, there have been those things as well. So, yeah, it'll be great. So, as I mentioned, it's so if anybody wants to make a morning of it, there's a flag raising at 8 a.m. at Jagera Hall.
In Brisbane,
yep. So Jagera Hall is 121 Cordelia Street, South Brisbane. And then at 9.30 a.m. meet at Parliament House for speeches for 11 a.m. March to Musgrave Park. Wear your mask, use hand sanitizers, and maintaining social distance is required for this our rally as well. And just a bit of history around it as well. As we mentioned yesterday on the show, NAIDOC started out as a march and a protest.
It did.
So we're continuing that tradition as well.
You can actually head to 989fm.com.au to see the chat that we had with Uncle John Maynard, who is the grandson of Uncle Fred Maynard, who was part of the beginning of the Day of Mourning in 1938. Yeah.
Well, his organisation was started in 1925, I believe, and from police harassment and scrutiny, they had to disband, but, you know, the legacy from that, you know, went on to sort of, because he was a part of organising that as well, so early Aboriginal political activist, which is amazing.
It is amazing. But as we mentioned before, we spoke to
Yese
from Musig Island, and I want to head over to Darwin where there's some stuff happening over there, and there's a fierce fighter that's been part of trying to push forward or push against something that's happening up there, and that's Larissa Baldwin. Good morning, Larissa.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good, sis, good. Before we go any further, your mob and your country, please.
I'm a Widjibal Waibal woman. Got a lot of connections to different Bundjalung mobs, but grew up down home in Lismore, and yeah, all my family, big family, Robert's family. So hello to all of them.
And sis, what's going on up at the moment?
To the moment, we've been working a lot. The government in the last federal budget, just before the budget, they announced hundreds of millions of dollars for the Beetaloo Basin and MacArthur Basins. And just recently, they've also announced another $50 million to start drilling. So basically grants for companies that don't have to be repaid in order to let these gas, like these companies come in and start fracking across the territory, which is incredible. Like over a decade, communities across the Northern Territory have been resisting these gas fields, and for the federal government to come in and now fund those projects, the reason they haven't been funded is because of the campaign waged by grassroots groups. But it's a game changer up there now.
What damage could this have on the community up there if it were to go ahead?
These gas fields, shale gas fracking is banned in many states and territories. Gas fracking is banned in Queensland. Shale oil fracking is not banned in Queensland.
How do they do that there? What kind of mining or fracking is shale gas?
So basically, they drill down 4 kilometres and then they drill horizontally up to 5 kilometres and they basically explode the shale seam. And the idea is like they just crack them all and then that allows the gas to come up. Like every single time that they frack, to extract gas, they have to frack and they put in millions and millions of litres of water. But what makes it so dangerous is that, you know, this is the fracking that caused a lot of problems in Wyoming and Texas and Pennsylvania in the US and was the subject of a grand jury over there around what it did to their aquifers. But in somewhere like, you know, the Northern Territory or in this country in general, kind of the first 400 metres underground, that's where the aquifers are that we drink from. And then what they want to do is basically drill through those and explode under them, which is incredibly dangerous. So in terms of water contamination from these casings breaking, it's a real risk, but also the surface level contamination is something that people are really worried about in the Northern Territory, where you have, you know, big monsoon season every year, you know, but in all seasons.
So you talk about this and it's banned in some states, but the Commonwealth government have actually put in $173 million into the Beetaloo Basin Gas Reserve, and they're insisting that the emissions targets are on track. How do you feel about that?
I mean, it's insane. Just one gas field in the Northern Territory, and this is our the analysis that was done on one of them a couple of years ago, is 6% of the carbon budget. And so when you now look at companies like Empire Energy, they have those weird, freaky names up there, but Empire Energy now has a license that 10% of the territory's landmass. It's humongous. And just like this, unlocking these new basins will basically blow all of our Paris targets, and it's insane that we'd be opening this new basin right now. Many basins, actually.
Also, Sis, you mentioned when they're fracking, the first, I think, couple of kilometres is the aquifers that people sort of live off. Where they're doing this, you know, obviously it's in sort of more rural, sort of remote areas, and the mob, you know, rely on sort of these underground aquifers for, you know, not just sort of drinking the water, but, you know, every other sort of source of water, you know, that they need sort of water for as well.
Yeah, and it's really scary. Like, one of the things, I've been working in the territory for years on this campaign. We were invited up there by Brother Gadrian when it was really early days on their campaign to help them out when I was working at Seed. And one of the things to understand when we were going around and talking to people, they just had no knowledge of there were all these exploration licenses. We know the land tenure changed and all that sort of stuff after the intervention, and that was a way that they were able to roll out these licenses over almost 90% of the territory's landmass. And so when we actually started talking to people, they were just like, why would we sign off on this thing? Not just is it completely dangerous and are they worried about surface area risk, but they're also worried about actually for in the territory, you know, a lot of their song lines are in those aquifers. And so they were just like, why would we allow them to drill through what are limestone aquifers and destroy what is their cultural flows and their dreamings? And also what's really big, you know, you talk to scientists in the Northern Territory and they say, you know, we don't know much about the water flows and catchments and that sort of stuff. And they always say, there's not much science on it. You talk to them all up there and they're just like, these are all connected, these aquifers.
You know, if you actually stopped and talked to the first scientists of the country, the people who have been living on this earth and maintaining it for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, then you'd actually find that there are answers right there, right in front of you. But there's almost this disregard, and this is what I was talking to Yesse Mosby about before. Like, he went to the Prime Minister to say, this is what's happening. I can see it happening. I've been here for 37 years. I know this has been passed down. But yet just absolutely no regard for what he thinks, what his knowledge is, you know. And also, let's even put that aside, let's just pretend whatever, but an independent inquiry into fracking in the Northern Territory found that Indigenous communities were overwhelmingly opposed to the fracking on the land. So even after that particular inquiry, the Northern Territory government removed some gas licences, but the remaining licences really surrounded those Aboriginal communities. So it was almost, again, a complete disregard of what mob, who have been part of thousands of years of living off this land, who are, in my eyes, and I think in many other people's eyes, the first scientists of this world, you know?
Yeah, I think that's where we go to as well, like, you know, especially around the water stuff. There was some research done and they found these kind of tiny little, like, they were like micro organisms. They're kind of like tiny, tiny prawns. And they realised that at one side, at the Cutter Cutter caves all the way up to, like, Catherine, so this huge area of aquifers, that the plankton in there basically biologically were siblings. And they were just like, so all this water is connected. And all the mob were like, this is the name of those things. And also we know that. Like, it's just, you know, when we, I was part of the inquiry, lots and lots of communities turned out to the inquiry and really had a hope that it would eventuate into a ban. So it was a bit of a kick in the teeth for people to see those no-go zones go on Darwin and Alice Springs and Catherine. And, you know, in some of the, you know, Borroloola, if you go to the boundary limit of the town, so where the housing is, there's a no-go zone there, but just outside of that, they're allowed to frack. And so they're like, well, that's not, that's still our country. We don't want you on our country.
And sis, Larissa Baldwin from GetUp, talking about the shale gas fracking that is happening up in the Northern Territory and about the destruction that that will have on the country. You're talking to us this week for NAIDOC Week 2021, Heal Our Country, Heal Our Nation. What does that mean to you, sis? What does that mean moving forward with this? I know that you've got a GetUp petition that can be signed right now. I'm doing it right now as we speak. getup.org.au/gas-and-fracking/let's-stop-origins-fracking-plans. Even if you jump on Google as well and just chuck in Origin Energy, don't frack the NT. Yes, don't frack the NT.org. What do you want to see happen from here? What are some practical things that could happen moving forward?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that particularly with the theme of Heal Country, I mean, it's a fine theme. To me, it's not as politically charged, I think, as it needs to be right now. I think there are some really big frontline fights happening across this country for our country that are being led by First Nations people. Gas is, you know, when you look at the six basins that Morrison is trying to open up and you really understand the issues around how, why traditional owners are opposed to them, not just the impacts of what fracking, they understand the impact of climate change, absolutely, but also just the risk and the industrialisation of country. People don't want to see it. And when you actually look at the landmass that this government is willing to open up and understand that on every single one of those big gas basins, so about six gas basins, there are First Nations people fighting on the front line that have been for, in some cases, almost a decade. And I think that, you know, we talk about healing for healing country, but how can you do that when the government is still trying to do these things? And also, it's not just about healing country. Like, people actually, we speak for country. We know country is a holistic value of, like, people and country are one and the same. We belong to this country. But I think there is some serious questions, right, need to be raised around, you know, what do veto rights look like in this country? What rights do we have? You know, we are still here. We've been on our country since time immemorial. Like, I was born on the country that I have a bloodline connection to since before colonisation. So, you know, what does that mean for our rights in this country? And I think that actually that's what we need to start looking at. Like, it's not okay just to, like, be waiting for government's goodwill to listen to us in these corporations and people like, you know, Santos shouting out Happy NAIDOC. Like, Santos wants to destroy so much land in this country and have destroyed so much land and water. You know, it's a bit of a kick in the teeth to see that sort of stuff, really.
Definitely.
I did wonder when I saw that if that was a little bit of sarcasm. But I think, sis, like, rights is one thing. I think having, you know, the right to be able to fight for land and so on and so forth. But also, like, the science, like the actual science, which I think is quite a common conservative argument, you know, look at the science, look at the science. Well, actually, how about you look at the science? You do this and the impacts of this are going to be so far-reaching. You can't put a price on something so so absolutely essential to who we are as human beings. We can't, you know, live without it, without that healthy environment. Sis, it's been amazing speaking with you this morning. Moving forward, what can people do to support this cause?
I think understanding, you know, there's some big fights going on, but talking to people about the issues of consent, like these traditional owners have consistently said no on the environmental impacts and climate impacts and talking about what would have made for their cultural heritage. But to understand that the government is trying to wage this conversation, these companies that, you know, there are traditional owners that have signed off. They, you know, for Origin Energy, is the landmass in the NT for their fracking activities like 1.5 times the size of Sydney. And they have one family that they have signing off on that landmass. You think about Sydney's like 29 clan groups. So understanding the very complex issues, who speaks for country, and the fact that these people are saying no to this. And, you know, you will see over the next coming months that the Conservative government will come out and start saying, well, they don't, there's some people that disagree and try and marginalise and that sort of stuff. And I think it's really incumbent for all the mobs that are standing up against fracking and these gas fields that the government is hell-bent on, you know, getting out of that gas out of the ground and oil, really. To have the conversations and educate people and get them to understand, no, these communities have been saying no for a very long time, and it's really important that, you know, we sign up to the petitions, go to don'tfracknt.org.au. But I just want to...
Is there anything else that sort of the broader public can do to support this other than maybe sign the petition? Like, yeah.
So we will see in September some national mobilisations as well. We know that the Cultural Heritage Act and those a lot of traditional owners have been asking for veto rights on the back of Juukan Gorge. We've been asking for it for decades and looking at what it means, what rights and powers we have over our country and the right to say no. We will state that right. It doesn't matter whether it's in law or not, and fight for country and hold that front line. It doesn't matter. We always have. But knowing that there are some big legislative reviews happening right now, cultural heritage legislation is being reviewed from state, territory and federal government right across the country, and it's going to take a lot of public pressure in order to get the governments to support the actual changes. You know, we get locked up in review after review to turn that into legislation. So, you know, there's big mobilisations coming this year. If you're with Origin Energy, if you're with, you know, these kind of gas providers, ring them up, change companies. Their retail brand is really important to them. And tell them that you're not going to support them. Ring your landlord, ring your government and tell them that you don't want to see gas in your household, because that's one of the ways we can stop these gas fields from going, these gas fields from going ahead, is to remove household reliance on gas, is removing their customer base as well. And it's happening. Victoria's just said all new builds have to be done without gas, basically. So there's lots of things that we can do, but I think right now when you're called to take action to on these different campaigns and that sort of stuff, to do it, because it really is building into a really big pressure phase at the moment.
Yeah, well, Larissa Baldwin from Get Up, doing amazing things in the space of healing country, healing our nation this week for NAIDOC 2021. Thank you for joining us here on Let's Talks. Special NAIDOC week. And happy NAIDOC week to you, sis.
Thanks. You too.
All good, sis.
Bo, it's been an interesting conversation that we've had today and yesterday about NAIDOC's healing country, healing our nation. And today, of course, we spoke to Jesse Mosby from the Torres Strait Islands, Musig Island in particular, speaking about how climate change is incredibly affecting them up there in the Torres Straits. But yet they're not the ones that are emitting the power. They're not at the forefront, but they are the ones that are...
on the receiving end.
Yeah. And then, of course, Larissa Baldwin.
From Get Up.
Yes.
Talking about what she is doing in the NT, supporting First Nations communities against multiple fracking campaigns. So definitely get onto those websites. Please support these community members who are fighting for a clean country and a healthy country, and a country to have you know, not just for the next 80 to 70 years, you know, like as we heard yesterday, this morning, mentioning that.
And this week for NAIDOC, we're also making sure, which we do anyway, that you buy black, see black, hear black, feel black, whatever.
What's the shirt you got on? And where'd you get it from?
I have a shirt on right now, Free the Flag shirt. This was given to me by the Clothing the Gaps lady. I've forgotten her name now, but thank you so much if you're listening out there. And so I'm wearing the Free the Flag. I also went to Open House Collective yesterday to buy my partner's mum some presents, and they've got some Injiluk artists. I got a lovely table runner from there for her, mm-hmm. and some beautiful Kakadu plum like soaps and stuff like that. And then I got my children some stuff from
T-shirt.
What was the T-shirt that she had? See the change. Take pride in the movement. So there you go. There are a couple of brands that you can buy to support Blackfellas this NAIDOC week. But don't just do it on NAIDOC week. Do it every week.
On social media, go check out Clothing the Gaps, Take Pride in the Movement, Nungala Creative, because I'm wearing a T-shirt from Nungala Creative, which is Black Rage. Go check them out as well.
And you got a hat on, Sacred Seas, yes?
Yes, from Take Pride in the Movement as well. This is their Torres Islander design hat. They have another one called Sacred Lamb, which is the Aboriginal one. They also got... a new hat out that I want to get as well because it looks so deadly. So
shout
out to them as well.
My friend Sharon this morning ordered a Rachel Zara hat. She's got some real deadly healing country hats with the heart and a little like heartbeat thing going through the middle. So you can jump onto Rachel Zara's site. Shout out to Rachel Zara. She's so deadly.
Definitely. They're doing great work out of this mob. Definitely support them. Buy black, wear black.
Hear black. Hear see black.
See it.
Be black.
Smell it. Eat it.
Well, and to take us out today, I want to play the deadly Archie Roach and Aunty Ruby Hunter. Keep your handouts. It's been an amazing program, Bo, but for the rest of the week, I'm going to join you with Bo to speak Healing Country, Healing Our Nation. It's an amazing theme. I love it.
Yeah, that's great. It is, and hopefully outside of this week, more people, the broader public, are talking about this specific issue and how important it is. You know, maybe Santos can give our land back. Stop destroying it after a tweet like that.
Well, you know, I don't know. Anything's possible, right?
Yes.
Give it a crack. We may as well give it a crack. And thank you so much for joining us here on 98.9 FM's Let's Talk program for NAIDOC 2021.